This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You are listening to the Oddball Aussie Podcast with me, your host, Oz Oddball. During this episode, you may hear things that challenge your own beliefs, but please have an open mind and enjoy. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Aussie Oddball, and if you have any stories you want to share, send them to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Yes, welcome back. So we're going to be talking about part two of paranormal research and equipment. So I hope you've already listened to the first episode. If you haven't, maybe go back and listen to that one first. In that previous episode, we talked about how to set up a research trip and what sort of basic equipment to use. Though really, you can do it without any equipment at all. It's just be aware that everything you tell people will just be your own word. You won't actually have any physical evidence, which is very hard to find anyway. So some people sort of give up on the physical evidence stuff and they just like to go out with no tech. But this is paranormal research and equipment if you want to use more equipment. So last week, basic kit. Your flashlights, your EVP recorders, so your voice recorders, things like who to talk to when you're setting up a ghost hunt. Another thing would be where to start. So starting with your ghost tours and things like that. So we gave out plenty of information, especially for new people and also for people who are coming back into the world of ghost hunting again. So really fun episode. I really enjoyed it. Had a pretty good feedback from a lot of people who contacted me. Had a few people contact me saying that it got them excited about going back out again, which was really good. And I had a couple of people contact me saying that it really helped set them up with some good ideas of what to look for when they go to buy stuff. As I said to you in the last episode, the best equipment you have is what you can afford or what you already have. So you don't necessarily have to go out and buy all the equipment that I'm going to be talking about tonight. The stuff I'm talking about tonight is very superfluous equipment. It's stuff you will not need, but it's handy to have. But a lot of this equipment you can make. You can build it yourself. You can make do with things. If you remember to last episode, or if you haven't listened to last episode yet, one of the big things I talked about last episode was getting an old phone. If you've got an old iPhone or an old Android or something, just sitting in a drawer somewhere, charge it back up. And even if it's got a cracked screen or whatever, who cares? As long as it works, you could use that as your ghost hunting phone. So you don't need to have phone service on it or anything. You just need to have a working camera, a working torch, a working voice recorder. And if you want to use an app that like a Ghostbox type app, we'll talk about that tonight. But it's essentially an old phone can be one of the best pieces of equipment you can use when it comes to ghost hunting. It can also be something that you might have to fiddle with for a while. So other people like to have independent equipment. So a lot of other people will like to have DSLR cameras. They think that it's a clearer picture, and a lot of time they're right, it is a clearer image. Other people will go with night vision cameras, which can be quite expensive for a good one. And then you're going to look at things like thermal imaging cameras and things like that. We'll discuss all that tonight. Ghost hunting can be as expensive as you want it to be. If you want to spend $1 million on a whole new vehicle with all the equipment and all the bells and whistles, you can easily do that. $1 million will get you one hell of a kit, but and one hell of a vehicle, but you could really build on that. But you could go as low as zero, as low as no money at all, build stuff from your own home. And we'll cover that, and we'll cover what you can do with your own equipment at home. So, I hope you're enjoying the new intro. I hope you're enjoying sort of the the episodes so far for the year. Hopefully we'll be sticking on track for a weekly episode again. And maybe if things are going well after probably February or halfway through February, we might bring in a second episode again. Maybe a monthly news episode, and potentially might even do a few episodes where we start getting some other podcasters on board to have a chat and do a duo episode. I do have a lot of people in the network, Straight Up Strange Productions, that would love to jump on and have a chat for a while. It's just about syncing up times and making sure everyone's got time to do it, because Australia, compared to American time, it can really throw off if you're asleep or if you're awake. So, yeah. All right. So I hope you've all been well, and I hope you've all been healthy. I hope the Omicron blues isn't getting you down too much. Honestly, use these podcasts as a way to a bit of escapism. Even if you don't believe in any of this stuff, even if you're a hardened skeptic, just switch your brain off for a little while and just enjoy thinking about some weird stuff. Sometimes, there's a part of my brain that's very skeptical. I very much run down the middle in my brain a lot of time. I have half my brain thinking, oh, but what if? And then my other half brain saying, but no. So you can be like that a lot of the time. But when you listen to these episodes, just relax and have an open mind, like I say in the intro. All right. So where to start? Well, okay. So we did basic equipment last week. So let's do a brief rundown on what that basic equipment was. So make sure you got a torch first and foremost, and lighting, some sort of torch, and make sure you set up a home base. So a place where you're going to have all your equipment set up. You're going to have batteries there. You're going to have food there. You're going to have first aid kits there. Commonly people use their vehicle at the front of the place and they'll set up their vehicle like this. When I've done it, I didn't really talk about this last episode, but when I've set up my home base, I've got an awning that goes on the roof racks of my car, and I can pull that out, set up a table underneath it, and I've got a little home base to work from. If you want to, bring a generator with you that can adapt to plugging in regular household cords, and you can charge things like phone batteries. You can charge your camera batteries, all that type of stuff. So it's been a long time since I've been out to ghost hunting though. So it's something I really want to get back into, to be honest. It gets a bit tricky when you've got kids though. I've got to be honest, getting a babysitter to go out to ghost hunting can be very, very tricky. But hopefully I'll get back into it maybe this year sometime, especially with all COVID last couple of years. None of us have been really able to go to any research trips or anything like that. Or even on any tours, just the fun little gimmicky tours that they have running we talked about last week. All right, so apart from lighting, what else might you need as basic? So just a rundown, make sure you've got cameras, whether it's on your phone, whether they're your Nest cams or your Ring cams, or whether you've got DSLR cameras, have some sort of a camera if you want to do recording. Your little handheld camcorders, they're really good as well, and you can get them really cheap nowadays. They don't need to be 4K or 8K or anything like that. Just need to be something that works. One that's really good is called the Bell and Howe camcorder. It has IR night vision, and it's really good for navigating in the dark. And set that up on a tripod and just let it record. And really, really useful piece of equipment. There's my phone going off because I'm so professional. All right. So after that, things like temperature gauges. Having a little handheld temperature gauge can be a really good thing to have. And making sure you've got mounts for everything that you want to use. Another thing you might want to use is your sound recording, so voice recorders. So you might get an independent one, and the one I told you about last week, it was an Olympus brand, and it's a really handy little voice recorder to use. I did have it here on my desk here somewhere, and it's gone. Maybe the ghosts ran away with it. I don't know. But yeah, really, really good little voice recorder to use. Anything where you can just press a button and set and forget. And you don't want anything with like touch screens or anything like that because it's going to chew through battery. You just want a real basic one. You can also get ones that have extendable microphones. My one, the Olympus, you can hook up a microphone that plugs into the bottom of it. The other thing you can do with it is you can transmit. So it can become, if you hook an aerial up to it, you can turn it into a small receiver, but doesn't send. But some of them, you can turn them into a little UHF as well. Just depends on how much you want to spend. The other thing you want to do is get some transport equipment. So some suitcases or the eggshell boxes that you can keep all your stuff in and keep everything sort of separated. You want to keep your battery separate from all your equipment as well, just in case you get a battery leak. And another thing with all your equipment, make sure that when you're done, remove the batteries from your equipment. It's really, really annoying when you leave the batteries in and then you don't go on another ghost trip or you don't go on another tour for, say, 6 months. And then when you come back to get all your gear going, you've got the green death, which is where all the battery acid starts leaking out. And it really does damage those pickups on the battery packs. So then potentially you won't be able to use that equipment again. You might have to replace it. Sometimes you can fix it. But ideally, end of every trip, take all the batteries out, put them in your kids' toys or whatever, or throw them away because a lot of them are going to be drained anyway. And you always want to start with fresh batteries. And another optional one, and we'll talk about that a bit today as well, is your EMF meter and your thermal imaging cameras. A little bit of extra equipment, but they are good to have. Later on in the show, we'll also discuss about more spiritual-based equipment and some potions and smudging, some things that you might want to pick up along the way. Really good to know. Some people don't want to go with tech, as I said before, so you might want to go with something like this. All right, so there's a plethora of stores that you can buy equipment from. And most of them, not being horrible, but are going to try and rip you off. They will try to sell you things that you absolutely do not need. Or they'll try to sell you things that you already probably have sitting around your house there somewhere. Things like lights, things that light up. You could easily use something like a child's toy. Things that make sounds. Once again, you got a children's toy around the house. You could easily use it. There's other pieces of equipment, things like laser dowsing rods. Dowsing rods are a thing that people find useful if you believe in that, but not necessarily. You don't necessarily need laser ones. There's a lot of laser stuff that comes up in all this this thing. There is one thing that I do like, and that is the laser grids, and we'll talk about that soon as well. All right, so let's start with EMF. So EMF is your first step of the upgraded equipment that you're going to want to buy. Now, you could go on these ghost websites. I'm looking at one right now, and I can find three on the front screen here. One is $64, one is $109, and one's $199. There's even a $70 one. It's just a Black & Decker EMF meter, but they've put a leather sort of case around it, and it's double the price of what they're worth. Honestly, there's one here I'm looking at, the K2 EMF meter. I can get the K2 EMF meter from my local store or just on Amazon or eBay for about $20, and on here they're selling it for about $65. So really, the good thing about the websites, not trying to take away money out of the mouths of these stores, but to be honest, some of them are just trying to rip you off. Now, the good things about these websites, what I've done in the past, I've used them for ideas. So I've looked at what they're selling and I'll go, oh, that's really a good idea. I like the idea of a laser grid, or I like the idea of an EMF meter that also has a thermometer and a voice recorder built into one. That's really cool. Now, where else can I find that? So then I'll start doing my own research. So something like the K2 EMF meter, real basic, real easy to use. EMF meters used to find studs in walls, if they've got that setting, used to find wires in walls as well. So, you know, before you start doing renovations, that's what I always use them for. When I was growing up, was working with my dad and working with out in trade jobs and stuff when I was a teenager. Finding electricals in walls. But the belief is that spirits give off a electromagnetic field. So that's what EMF stands for. So the idea of using a EMF meter is that if you're in a room that has no electronics in it, you're nowhere near a wall, and all of a sudden it starts going off, this is a really good way to sort of question what's setting it off. A lot of people looking at you, ghost hunters, and whatever his name is, the dude who's got the haunted museum with the Dybbuk box, which is absolute BS. I know, hot take right there. If you want to know more about that, check out my episode about Dybbuk boxes. I'm not a big fan of that fellow, and I'll come. That's how much I don't really care. I can't even think of his name. People like that will manipulate EMF fields. So this can be easily done. As I said to you in the previous episode, I began basically doing fraudulent things in ghost hunting trips to build up suspend belief and make people believe something else is really happening, and suspense, really building up that suspense. Not proud of it, but I needed a job at the time, and it was the only job going in town that I could do alongside of my day job. So I picked up working with that. But in that, I learnt a lot. I learnt how to pick people who are bullshitting you, and I learnt how to help people, like all of you who are tuning in, how to pick a bullshit artist. Now, that hasn't stopped. Once you start thinking like that, you can honestly pick these people apart. So one of the really interesting things I've been seeing nowadays is the use of health rings. So people will use a Bluetooth connected ring on their finger, and it gives you your biometrics. So it tells you how much running you've done for the day, what your heart rate is at, your blood pressure and all that, all from a ring. Now, the interesting thing with these rings is that they carry an EMF field. They do have electronics in them. So if you were to someone who wanted to BS, you could hold the EMF meter in one hand, say your right hand, have the ring on your left hand. You would wave your EMF meter around and then swap the EMF meter around to your left hand. No one would even know that ring on your finger is electronic. So keep an eye out for this. They will do this sort of stuff. Those rings didn't exist when I first started, so that wasn't something that you could pick out people on. But I have watched videos, and I've seen that they've had a very dark or a very thick ring on their finger, and I've always wondered, is that one of these health rings, one of these smart rings? So keep an eye on things like that. And if you're on a tour doing research with someone, ask them if you can also use the EMF meter. And if all of a sudden the EMF meter stops doing anything, start to question what's going on. Some people will hold the EMF meter down by their pocket, then quickly bring it up high. Doing this will trigger the EMF in your phone, in your pocket, and if you bring it up really quickly, it'll look like you've found something. And the residual will keep on beeping for a couple of seconds after. So I'm just arming you, getting you ready for some of the bullshit artists that will try to swindle you out of things. Now, let's think about the real stuff. So let's go with people. You're with a group of friends. You're with people that you trust, a research team that you trust, and you know they're not bullshitting you. This is where the EMF meter can be really handy, where you can just sit it down somewhere and all of a sudden it starts beeping. People have used the EMF meter as a way to communicate. So as it beeps, they'll ask the spirits to come closer to it and to understand how the EMF meter works. Other times they'll combine this with the digital thermometer. So if you've got a digital thermometer, like a laser thermometer, and you've got an EMF going off, and all of a sudden it's really, really cold and you're outside, well, cold spots can be anything. It can be a little dip in the weather. It can be wind blowing over a mound. But if you're getting cold spots in one area in particular in a building, and there's no power on, there's no air conditioning, nothing like that, then you've got to start questioning what it could be. Now, if you start getting readings on your EMF meter, as well as the cold spots or hot spots, then you start to think, what could be going on? At this point, I'd then set up a EVP. I'd set up a voice recorder to try to get some EVPs. So set that up, as we said last week, always date and time stamp it when you turn it on, and state your name into the EVP, into the voice recorder, so that you can differentiate you from the EVP. Now, let's say you combine thermals with your EMF meter readings with... Now you've got a slight voice coming through on the voice recorder. I'd be sitting there going, that's pretty good proof. That's pretty good. Like, that's if there's three things going on, that's pretty good. And if you can hand on heart say, this isn't being manipulated, this isn't being controlled in any way, that's some really interesting stuff. And that's stuff that people want to hear about and people want to see. The stuff that we don't want to see is these people who come out and manipulate the data. So be careful with EMF meters. It can be manipulated. The other thing is that if a person knows the house well enough, they'll know where there's residual currents. So certain buildings will have residual currents because they might have low-hanging lights where the power hasn't been completely shut off, and they could wave it around a certain light fitting, especially old light fittings, and they might get a response, say, 2 meters away from the light fitting, especially if it's a hanging light from the ceiling. Just be aware of things like this. Not trying to put a wet blanket on anyone's ghost hunting trip, but I just don't want you all getting ripped off and taken for a ride, because a lot of them will do this. EMF meter is really, really good. As I said, the K2 is a really good EMF meter. I had a K2. I've still got it here somewhere. I think it's up in my back shed. Basically, five lights, and each light is a reading. So ranging from 1.5 to 20 plus mg. And yeah, so if you're getting 20 plus mgs and you're... So if you've got red light nonstop and then it just goes off, and you can't find it anywhere else ever again, that's interesting. That's really interesting, because I'd be wondering what's doing it. The other thing that you want to keep an eye out for is if your lights are lighting up like a pinwheel. It's going blue, green, yellow, orange, red, blue, green, orange, yellow, red. And it just keeps on going around and around and around. Or even more interesting, if it goes blue, green, orange, blue, green, yellow, orange, red, then red, orange, yellow, green, blue. So if it's going backwards and forwards, that could be a really strange thing as well. Because generally speaking, normal electronic fields don't do this. Normal electronic fields will hold a stable light. So if you've got an electronic field of 2.5 mgs, you might get a stable yellow and green light holding, and it won't change ever. Unless someone goes out and turns off all the power, or there's a blackout and there's absolutely no power going to the house. Even then, you might get a residual of 1.5. So be alert. Be aware to things like that. If you start getting... The weirdest one I've ever heard was people getting blue, yellow, red, orange, green. Blue, yellow, red, orange, green. So it was jumping around. It was actually playing with the meter. That, to me, could be something. There could be something to that, whether it's ghosts or something else from the paranormal. Who knows? That's the other thing with doing ghost research, is you're never really going to know what you're dealing with. People will sit there and say, it's demons. it's the fae. It's ghosts. It's gods, or it's God himself. You never know. You're never going to know unless we get told when we pass away. You're never actually going to know what you were dealing with. It's really hard. I see people on these ghost shows, they believe they're getting confirmation. And they'll say, oh, yeah, this feels like my father's energy. Well, if there is trickster spirits out there, and we've seen trickster spirits in all walks of mythology, say Loki, for instance, is very much a trickster spirit. When we see nasty gods and things like that, like Set and from Egyptian history, when we get these nastier and trickster spirits, what's to say that we don't have, I'm saying spirits because some people believe they're spirits, others believe full-heartedly that they're gods. But let's say that it's something like that, some paranormal being that is a trickster that's playing games with you. Honestly, I am more interested in recording data, finding interesting things, rather than trying to put a name to the person who's trying to communicate with me. If I go on a ghost tour and people are saying, oh, that is definitely the ghost of Theodore Schmidt. He was a general in the army, and he came home one day and found that his wife was cheating on him, so he killed them all and then killed himself. Okay, that's a great story. That's a really interesting story. I'd love to know the history of that. But what makes you believe that's him? What's to say there's not something else paranormal that's there? What's to say that it's someone else that didn't die there, or that it's just some spirit that's connected to a person that's there on that night in particular? People will say, "Oh, but he said his name through EVP. He said his name on the voice recorder." Okay. Still doesn't outrule tricksters. Still doesn't outrule someone messing around. And doesn't outrule humans messing with your data either. You really have to be careful with that. All right. So EMF meter, as I said, you want to get a good one, check out your local hardware store. For us Aussies, a Bunnings or a Mitre 10. In America there, I believe you could check out your Walmarts, things like that. You'll find them cheap. 15, 20 bucks. I've seen them as low as like $5, but I wouldn't really trust that they actually work. I wouldn't trust them to use them on my walls when I'm looking for electrical wires and studs, let alone using it for ghost equipment. So I'd go with something good. Black & Decker, any Ryobi, any good sort of brands. The K2 EMF meter is one of the most used. It's really, really popular, really, really simple. And again, it doesn't use any fancy screens or anything, so it uses very, very little battery power. And that's exactly what you want. Because if you're saving batteries for all your other equipment, you don't want to chew through batteries on your EMF meter. Cool thing is, if you can find the K2 for about $20, on these sites, you can buy them for $64. You could buy three for that price, and you could set them up in different locations, sort of like a ghost trap type of thing. Another thing that we used to do is we'd get through EMF meters and put them around, sit around a circle, and you put them in between. So you'd leave a gap between people. Say if you got four people would sit looking at each other and leave a gap in between each person and put an EMF meter in between. And if you can, put a temperature gauge there as well. Just depends on how much equipment you've got. And really interesting to see if anything sort of wants to sit next to someone and invite them in. Okay, the next one that is fairly common, but is very expensive. This one I wouldn't recommend unless you are looking to spend a bit of money, unless you can actually afford it. Once again, the best ghost hunting equipment you have is what you already own and what you can afford. Don't go and break the bank for this equipment, because sometimes it doesn't work. And not only that, if you buy some of this equipment, make sure you do the training properly. So this piece we're going to be talking about is thermal imaging cameras. They are much cheaper. I remember when I started back 2006, 2005, I remember thermal imaging cameras, your average thermal imaging camera, which is really bare bones, real basic, was about $3,000. And it was, compared to what we have now, it was absolute garbage. Now, most of these ghost hunting stores, you'll find them for about $500, but you can get them if you, once again, look elsewhere. You can get a thermal imaging camera for as low as a couple of $100. You can get thermal imaging cameras that also hook up to your phone using your USB-C. I'm not sure if there are ones that work with iPhones. I but I know that there are ones that work with USB-C, which is on your Androids. So, really, really handy bit of kit to have. Reason why people use thermal imaging cameras. Well, the belief is that we'll be able to see ghosts moving on screen, so change in temperature. So a lot of people believe that if there's a ghost in the area, it'll come up as a cooler temperature so that you might actually see a movement of something on the screen. When the way these thermal imaging cameras work, is what people need to understand is that they pick up the hottest temperature in the room, and that's then its guide. So if you've got a temperature in the room that is, say, if you were using this for firefighting purposes, for instance, if you shone this onto a 800-degree fire, then anything that's about 10 degrees will barely show up on the camera, because right now it's trying to find those hot points. If you're in a room and the highest temperature is a person's body temperature, so let's say, you know, externally, maybe anywhere between 28 to 30 degrees, depending on how many layers they're wearing and everything, then you'll get a clearer picture of everything around you. You'll be able to see things through the camera a lot easier. And obviously, the more expensive you go, the better you're going to get. So the more expensive ones with your FLIR, so F-L-I-R, your FLIR brand, they're going to be more expensive, but they're going to be able to differentiate between a 100 degrees and minus 10 degrees really, really well. Your cheaper ones, you're going to want to make sure you have a fairly good understanding of what you're looking at. You don't want to just assume looking at it, oh, see that? That was something that moved. It could have just been your shadow. These things will pick up shadows depending on what you're looking at. The other thing that you need to be aware of is that many of these thermal imaging cameras will also reflect off of mirrors, windows, or anything that's metallic, and it can cause abnormalities in the camera. I had someone send me pictures that they had been told by a friend. Well, when I say a friend, someone who was running a ghost tour, and they were using these pictures as advertisement to say that this hotel, this pub, was haunted. They sent me the pictures, say, hey, Oz, check this out. What do you think? I took one look at it, and I was able to tell them that was a thermal imaging camera being shone back from a mirror, and you could clearly tell. When the person went and queried the ghost tour operator, they told them that there were no FLIR cameras shone into mirrors. They're more professional than all that. They then proceeded to go on another tour, lined up their camera with the same spot where this FLIR was taken, and there was definitely a hallway mirror there. So if not a mirror, I couldn't clearly see. It might have even been a picture with a glass panel in the front of it. It'll do the same thing. It'll reflect it back, and it causes a lot of abnormalities. Really good for people who want to bullshit. Really good for people who want to con you, because they'll be able to use these abnormalities to make, if you've got it, get it on the right angle, you can make it look like there's a person there. If you move it in the right way at the right speed, you can make it look like there's mist around a window and stuff like that. So be aware of things like that. Always have an open mind. So as we go through this equipment, I'll point out how it can be manipulated, but I'll also point out how it can be real. So that's how that can be manipulated. The other thing it can be manipulated is if people want to set things up. So maybe they have cold packs hidden under blankets, and they tell you you can't touch anything in this room. But they'll put cold packs underneath blankets, and they'll lay them out in, say, four or five squishy, roundish-shaped cold packs in the shape of a T under blankets. When you put a thermal imaging camera on that bed, it'll look like there's someone lying there. It'll look like the imprints of someone lying there. So be really careful of that. Another thing is they might have an air conditioner turned on and tell you it's not turned on. Then they might take a photo using the thermal imaging camera of the air conditioner, and sometimes you can get like a mist look coming out if they've got it really, really cold. Especially during winter, you can really make that work quite easily. Other ways to manipulate, you can use heat to manipulate. So you could easily set up something like hot water bottles. Again, set them up in a way that looks like someone's sitting on a chair somewhere, and people will shine their cameras and their thermal imaging camera onto a lounge chair, and they'll go, "Oh, look at the heat around this." And it'll be just hot packs or hot water bottles stuffed inside a chair cover or inside the chair lounge cushions. So be careful of that. And I'll guarantee you, if that is the case, they'll tell you things like, "You can't sit in that chair. That's really dangerous. We don't want you sitting in that chair. Please do not sit in that chair." Or because of the historic value of the furniture, we don't want you touching anything. A lot of time that's true. But if they're very particular about a spot where you can clearly see heat or cold, then there might be something going on there. If you get a chance, not saying you should if it's very historical stuff, but I would put my hand near it and see if there's heat there. If I can feel heat, then they're doing something. There's a bit of fuckery going on, as many people would call it. So keep an eye out for that. All right, so the good way of using thermal imaging cameras, though, setting them up on a tripod. Honestly, setting them up and letting them, some of them record. Another way to use them is walk around with them, and you don't move them quickly. Move them very slowly and be direct about where you're pointing them. So have a look at where you want to point it. Have a look what's there. So no mirrors, nothing reflective. Cool, I'm going to use it. Save the batteries in them. The batteries in them can burn out very quickly. You can run out of battery in a thermal imaging camera very quickly because of the screen. In a dark room, if possible, turn the screen down to low to save some battery power. Really good time to use them is if you've got cold spots or hot spots, or if you've got an area where, say, your voice recordings are very prevalent. You've found voice recordings there in the past. Another thing you could use them on is when your EMF meter goes off, point a thermal imaging camera in that direction. The one weird thing I can say, which I wish we had one that night that happened to me. I don't know how true it is because I wasn't behind the thermometer, but my wife and I were along to a tour one day, and some other people on the tour had seen me taking photos off to one side, and they had pointed a thermometer at me for some reason, because they had taken a photo and there was mist in the photo. So they pointed a thermometer at me, and the thermometer reading from what they took a photo of the thermometer reading, and it was reading at something like minus 30 on my body. They took it from multiple angles, took multiple photos, and we just couldn't figure out why that was saying minus 30. They took the batteries out, put new ones in, turned it all back on, and still, every time I walked over that area, minus 30. Then all of a sudden it stopped, and my body temperature went back to normal again. Could have been error in the equipment, for sure. But it also could have been something quite strange, because when I was standing over there, I was feeling quite hot. I was feeling like, and this was in the middle of a night, probably a spring night it would have been. So not hot, but I was feeling quite sweaty, quite hot, and we hadn't really gone that far. And especially at that time, I was I was a very, very fit person at that time. So I wouldn't have been overheated or anything like that. It's just something really strange. And I wish to this day that we had have had a thermal imaging camera that night, because that could have proven maybe something extra. And I wish I'd have known more about what I was doing back then. I wish I'd listened to more podcasts back then, but podcasts are only starting to become a thing. That was about 2006 that we did that. So yeah, podcasting wasn't really a massive thing. There was a few out there, but really, it was all about the ghost hunting TV shows and episodes that talked about the equipment and all that type of stuff. But equipment was expensive then. An EMF meter then, with a screen on it and a thermal thermometer built into it, you'd be looking at probably $500 or $600 just for that. A EMF meter, just your K11 back then, was about $70. Yeah, we didn't have the prices we have now. As I said, thermal imaging camera in 2005, 2006 was about $3,000 for a good one. And to get even a camera that you can get now for $20 on Catch, or which not a sponsor of the show, but any of these little dollar shop type online stores, even eBay, you can get a camcorder. You can buy like a box of like 10 camcorders for about $200. You can buy a camcorder for $20 now. You can buy little spy cam cubes. They're not great, but they work. And they have IR in them as well, so infrared for night vision. And you can get them for about $20, $30 per cube. So we've come a long way when it comes to mass producing, I guess you could say. So, so thermal imaging, great piece of equipment. Just make sure you're using it properly. Now that's sort of your two extras that you'd want in that basic kit. Now what we're going to is some of the more out there stuff, some of the more stranger stuff. But I'll start with the one that I think everyone should have or should at least try to get their hands on and have a go of. They're really, really fun to use, and you can get some really weird results out of them. And they're laser grids. So you can get laser grids that, exactly what they say, they're just a big, it's just like a projector that shines a laser grid of red squares all over your wall. You can also get laser grids that shine just red dots all over the walls, or green. So it could be green dots or green squares. Really, really handy to use. Really cool. We can use them in trades and things like that as well. So a lot of times they're used for marking out walls. You can use them to plan out like where a door's going to go, for measurements, things like that. But ideally what we're going to use them for in ghost hunting is to see any, aberrations. So any changes, to the wall. So if we have the laser projector, the laser grid, point at the wall and set up, and it's shining a grid everywhere, I'll put a picture on Twitter showing what these laser grids do. And so check them out after you listen to the episode, or even while you're listening to the episode, go and check it out. So when you set these up, the really cool thing about them is that they, once they're on a tripod and they're stable, they don't move. Unless something moves between them. Now, if a human moves in front of it, it's going to go black. It's going to cut out. Or if an insect flies in front of it, it's going to cut out. The weird part, and I know this can be manipulated, people do have ways of manipulating this, but the weird thing is, if you're looking at it with your own eyes, not through a camera, you're there, you've got this grid set up, and you're looking at it, and all of a sudden the lines start to warble and warp. That's weird. That's really strange to see. I've only ever seen it once, and I still don't know what it was. There's just a weird sort of warble. And it wasn't, a lot of people say they see it on a horizontal line. The warble I saw was like a vertical line, and it traveled from one end halfway through and then back to the left-hand side again. So maybe potentially an error in the lens could have been. But again, I have no evidence to say it wasn't something strange. I've got no evidence to say it was something strange. For me, it was weird because for the rest of the night, we didn't have an error in it. We didn't have anything happen to it at all. When we brought it up on camera, everyone in the room saw this warble. When we brought it up on camera, you could barely see the warble. Maybe it was just something we were hoping to see. Maybe we psyched ourselves out. Potentially, yeah, that's always something that could be a thing. But we all know what we saw, and it was strange. It was very, very strange. So a laser grid, definitely get your hands on one. You can get them fairly cheap again. They start at around about $100. You can get USB rechargeable ones. They're not great, but they'll do the job. And they're about $20. You can get them for even cheaper than that, $15. But you can go all the way up to a sensor array, which will set up arrays, say, in a whole room. So four-way direction arrays. If you go with something like that, you're going to be spending probably about $300, $400. But yeah, that's what I mean. You can make this as cheap as you want. Failing this, another thing you could always do is a torch with cellophane. Torch with cellophane, light up a wall red, and on the cellophane you could faintly draw on there with a pen some lines, and you'll get a. It won't look amazing, but it'll give you the same result. You'll be able to see if anything's traveling over that wall. If it blocks out the sensor, then it means there's physically something there. If the sensor's still lighting up, but you can see the wall sort of warping, then that means there might be something paranormal there. Ways that this can be manipulated is normally through post-production. So when people record a wall with laser grids on it, they can get in there with post-production editing and edit in a warp. So maybe they have someone, they record, so you know, the TikTok videos where they record half and they record another half and they record another half. You can do that with anything. So what you could have is someone wobbling the camera, wobbling the sensor rather, and then you record that, and then you record the flat wall, then you record the flat wall again, chop it up and make it and take the person out who's wobbling the camera, and you can make it look like it was a warp in the camera. Again, these types of techniques are best for you to use for yourself. It's not really for you to go out there and try to prove to people, because there's always going to be a skeptic out there that's going to say, nah, that was post-production editing. That doesn't fly here. Not doesn't work. Made it all up. So use it for your own research values. All these things are great, but they work better when you use them all together. So if you have a grid set up, I would have a thermometer set up on the grid as well. So maybe one at each end. So two thermometers, a laser thermometer pointed at the wall, scanning the wall for temperature changes, and a voice recorder scanning for any voice apparitions. You're also going to want to set up maybe things like wind chimes and stuff like that, some very basic stuff. We'll go into some of that stuff after. But yeah, you could go with something like that for sure. So set up and plan. Plan how you're going to have things put together. Don't just arrive on scene and go, you know what, I'm going to just chuck all this together in this one room. Have a plan. Pre-plan before you get to the house. Go to the house early with minimal equipment. You might get a reaction there on the day or on the first night that you go there, but pre-plan where you want to go. Get the history, like I said in the first episode, plan it out. What you can just throw things together. Like you might just want to go, oh, I just thought of trying this. Cool, go ahead and do it. But I would ideally have some sort of a plan to work on. All right, so the next one I'm going to talk about is a little bit, how could I say it? There's a lot of people who don't believe these things and who aren't really happy with using them. So these are the geo ports, geo boxes, ghost boxes, the Huff portal, portals they might call them. So what are they? So the original portal amplifies and enhances EVP and spirit communications. Used with your spirit or ghost box to encourage spirit communication. Original portal uses a TC reverb pedal, ZT lunchbox amplifier, and noise killer unit to produce incredible sound and pick up EVPs that may otherwise be too low to be picked up. The copper coil on the portals is believed to be a conduit for all the spirits to use as an antenna for communication. The portal comes with a coiled copper antenna attached to the ground sleeves of each connected cable. It is believed that the coil can act as a conduit when held by the user during communication. The human body can act as an antenna as a spirit uses the body to channel into the portal via the copper coil. I do need to say there's no science backing that, it works like that. Obviously, we'd know if there was. But that's not saying there's not parascience behind. That's not saying it's something that we haven't really understood yet. But it is getting into the very... I don't know. It's getting into a very airy-fairy type of stuff when you're saying that you can turn yourself into an antenna. Okay, I believe that people can do things like that, but just be aware, yeah, you want to get some data along with that as well. So the Geo Box or the Geoport are ghost hunting gadgets designed and created by Ohio-based paranormal inventor George Brown. So this is the man who invented the original ones. He has a background in electronic engineering and a lifelong passion for the paranormal. His stunning handmade devices are retrofitted into beautiful original vintage wooden radio cabinets. One thing I will say, they are beautiful. They are really well made. I'd love to have one, just to have one on display. So, you know, if you want to get the podcast one, if you want to hear me use it on the show, maybe hit up old Uncle Oz, send a message to the oddballaussie@hotmail.com. And maybe if any of you got one that you don't want to use or you want to get rid of, send it over. I'd be happy to use it on the show. Maybe we can get an EVP guest host. So the first box was completed in 2015, and since then they've been used extensively in ghost hunting. They also appeared in the Paranormal Lockdown UK in 2019. That show was cancelled, and Jack and Katrina Osborne, Katrina has moved to work with Jack Osborne in the Travel Channel series Portals to Hell. And she's taken a geoport with her. So Portals to Hell, you'll see the geoports being used. A lot of the Travel Channel stuff will use a bit of this equipment. They are pretty cool gadgets to use. I don't know how much I put into them. Same as Ghost Box. So what's a Ghost Box? Well, a Ghost Box is essentially a scanning radio. Real simply put, it's a scanning radio that just constantly scans. It's designed to not stop scanning. And you sit there and you write down the bits and pieces of words that come through. So you ask a question, you turn it on, and you write down what comes out. Anyone who's a fan of Hellier will see them use Ghostbox, and they'll do a technique where you have someone with headphones on, so no one else can hear the ghost box. There's headphones hooked up to the ghost box. They have headphones on with a blindfold over their eyes, so they can't see anyone who they're talking to. They can't hear anyone except for what's going on in the ghost box. They will sit there, and someone else will ask the questions. So someone who's not, who doesn't have headphones on, who doesn't have the blindfold, they'll ask the questions. You'll have another person taking notes, and the person with the headphones on and the blindfold on will just say the words that they're hearing. So as they hear a word, they'll just say it. They'll verbalize that word. This is a really interesting way of doing it, and a pretty cool way of doing it without allowing too much BS to get in. We're talking about fuckery before. This cuts back on that, so this stops that from happening in some ways. Obviously, the person who's has the earmuffs on and the blindfold could be sitting there just saying, death, torture, death. Yeah, they could muck around, but where it becomes more interesting is when the words that are being said directly link up with the question being told. So if the question was, what is your favorite color? And then all of a sudden the person that can't hear you ask the question answers with red and green. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, okay, so we've got red and green. That again is going to be something that is individual, independent to you. Some people are going to do this and never get a single experience at all. Some people are going to do this and have amazing experiences. Okay, so geez, we're getting into all this equipment, and we're running out of time to do the metaphysical stuff. So maybe I'm thinking we might do a part three. We might do a whole episode on the metaphysical stuff, the non-electronics. So the last one we want to talk about is your homemade devices. People are going to try and sell you homemade devices. These can be things like a teddy bear with lights in them. It could be as simple as a light switch that is triggered by voice activation. It could be something as a foot pedal from a guitar hooked up to a light and triggers whenever the foot pedal is touched. It could be a sensor. It could be a doorbell sensor, a security sensor that triggers and beeps. So you can, once again, be as expensive as you want to. You can have a light trigger with a motion counter. So this is a light trigger where as things go past it, it counts every time something's been past it. Really, really cool piece of equipment to set up if you're going to set up a room with nobody in it. That is really, really cool. It is something I'd probably pay for because it does something that I can't create. I mean, smart people who are good with electronics, you could probably create this. So the ones that people will try and sell you, which I think are bullshit, are things like children's toys. So children's toys that light up are things that I think aren't worth you buying from a ghost shop. So for instance, you can get these bears called Boo Buddies or Buddy Bears or Ghost Bears, Haunted Bears. Now they're making dolls for them as well just to make them look super creepy. And they'll have lights in their stomach, and one in each hand and maybe one in each foot. And the idea is that the hands, you'll apply something to them. So the left hand of the bear might mean yes, the right hand of the bear might mean no. And you'll say that out loud, and you'll say, light up the left hand if you agree. Light up the right hand if you don't agree. If you are getting angry, light up the stomach of the bear. If you want us to leave, light up the feet of the bear. You can buy children's toys and do the exact same thing. You could buy... So I used to, still do, I like doing wargaming with Warhammer and stuff like that. Now, I used to make up things for the tabletop gaming that had lights in them. Most of my lights came from cheapo toys that were the kids had broken that maybe half the lights worked in them. So I'd gut the toy because the kids weren't playing with them anymore, throw the rest of the toy away, use the lights in the toy to make lights for the tabletop. And you can do the same thing. Just taking the lights out of a toy monster truck. You go into, like, say, a discount store, a dollar store, and you see a toy monster truck there or a toy robot that's got lights in it. $2, you pull them out, and you put them on a, let's say they've got a button, or you can even solder them onto your own little clicker button or a motion button. Not hard to buy those things online. You can get those for a couple of dollars as well. Or you could leave them as they are. So you get a toy. You could find a toy like a doll that lights up, and just sit it there and ask the entities that are around you to light the lights up on the doll. So in this case, you'd turn the doll on. One thing with using toys that I've got to say is make sure they're not a voice activated toy in the sense of our voices. Because that's going to really throw things off. Every time you speak, it's going to start talking. The other thing with this is you want to make sure that you have the button on the back turned to on and not demo. Because if it's on demo, a lot of times the toy will just make itself work anyway. Because what it's designed to do is demo is designed to be in the store so that as kids walk past, it's going to make sounds and make kids go, "Oh, what's that?" So take it off of demo, make sure it's in the on position. And yeah, you don't need to pay $80 for a Boo Buddy or a Scare Bear or whatever the hell they want to call them nowadays. You could easily just replace it with a normal toy that lights up. You could also have set up a really interesting one that I like to use is wind up music boxes, but make sure they're completely unwound. so that no sound can come out of them. If they start making sound, it means something is turning that dial on the inside, especially if the handle's not attached. Take the handle out of it and just sit it there. If it starts to make sound, it means something is making that sound work, especially if it's completely unwound. So they're normally run on a metal coil, and as the coil tightens, when the coil's tight, as it releases, it'll start playing the music. So if the coil is completely unwound, it shouldn't play any music. I've seen people use Toy Story Woody dolls for this as well because of the pull string in the back. If the sound coming out of a Woody doll that's a pull string or any pull string toy, that can be a bit freaky because why would this be happening? Again, you can find these toys very cheap at discount stores, or maybe your kids have got some old toys sitting around that you're going to throw away anyway, and you can repurpose into ghost hunting equipment. Another one you might want to look at is motion sensors. So you can buy motion sensors at most discount stores, most electronic stores. If you go to hobby stores, you can buy the sensors by themselves and you can build them into whatever you want. So if you wanted to, you could build them into very basic looking equipment. So if you were using them for, say, security purposes, you could build them into your door frame and no one would even know they're there, until they walk past and bells start chirping. You can also have them set up. If you want to go expensive, you can get motion sensors that are smart sensors that will trigger straight to your phone. So as soon as you have a hit, it'll put a counter on your phone and it'll tell you that the motion sensors are going off and it won't make a sound. So that way, you're not worrying about the sensors going off because a moth flew by them or anything like that. It will tell you how big the object was that moved past the sensor. So it'll say some of these really expensive ones, or not even expensive, some of the really high-tech ones will say the object covered the total of the camera, or it might say the object covered a partial of the camera. Of the sensor, and that'll tell you, okay, it was a partial block or is a full block. So there's some really good tech out there now that you can find. Also, check out a lot of the 3D printer crowds. So there's plenty of 3D printer people online. My buddy and I are currently actually working on getting Mayan death whistles made. We've made two already. I mean, I'm not going to blow it too loud because it's nighttime here, but yeah, it's not sounding perfect just yet, but it's definitely something we want to work on, and something that would be pretty cool to use as a paranormal research tool. So we're making those. We're trying to perfect them so we can get the real scream happening. And I've heard of people using these in research trips to sort of stir up the spirits a bit. And I know a lot of people say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You research how you want, you take the risks that you want to take, but you acknowledge that when you do take risks, it's on you, it's not on anyone else you're going with. And you tell people as well, by the way, if you are going to take risks on a trip, if you are going to do things that might make people go, ooh, I don't really like that, such as bringing a spirit board or a Ouija board with you, let people know before the trip. One of the worst things I see in ghost hunting trips or tours is when someone brings out the metaphysical stuff that really freaks some people out, or they start doing things like the death whistle without telling anyone, and it scares the hell out of people. Or they'll set up motion sensors without saying they're going to do it, and then people go off to take a leak and they get caught out by the motion sensors, and everyone panics and everyone's on edge then. And then as soon as everyone's on edge, everyone's hearing everything, and the data gets a little bit abstract at that point. So always let everyone know who you're going with, exactly what your intentions are and what you want to do. So have a look at what other things you could come up with. Some people use iPads that with the touch screen on the iPad. You can download apps that have got light up touchpads. A lot of people use these for their kids. Some people use them for children or young people or people with disabilities as a tactile, like a light up thing. They can touch them and they can light up. These can be used as well out in the field. You could set one of these up. And let's say you're doing a spirit board, or let's say you're doing a recording, you could sit there and speak to it and ask it to light up certain squares or triangles or anything like that. You could also have things like just a simple torch setup where if you want the torch to be turned on and off, ask them to turn it on and off. People tend to think that it's easier. The overall understanding is that it's easier for spirits to deal with sensor-based things than physical switches, which, I mean, for skeptics, that's really easy for them to say, well, that's because it's not real. Maybe. Maybe that's exactly why people like sensors, because it's easier to trick a sensor. It's really hard to make a switch flick itself on and off. But in saying that, people swear by that they've had their torches. They've watched their torch lights flick on and off. But sensors, let's say it is a real thing. Let's say it turns out that they rely on energy, not physical kinetic energy. They rely on some other form of electro energy in the air or something. If that's the case, then sensors are probably the better way of going. You can also have a thermal array. A thermal array is a fairly new thing. They can be expensive, but they can be really helpful as well. Thermal array is a exactly that. It's an array of lights, like little square lights, on what looks like sort of like a calculator thing. And you can use these, you can have these bolted onto anything you want, really. And you could slap one of these on the side of your vehicle, on the side of your carry cases, and you light it up. And wherever the pad heats up, the lights will turn red, and the colder areas of the pad, the lights will turn blue. These things are fairly new, as I said, but they can be really, really creepy if you start to see, say, handprints, like a hand pattern being made on the touchpad, on the heat pad, because it's not based on touch alone. It's based on temperature. So if you get one corner of it that's heating up, and you know that the temperature overall is all the same, that can be really that can be a really strange situation. So that's called a thermal array. Really, really cool to use. You can get them cheaper, but generally they sit around about the $200 mark. So they're only if you want to spend some money. The next one I want to talk about, now this is where you will be spending some money. There is no cheap version of this. You will have to spend money on this. And that is your Kinect cameras, your SLS cameras. So a lot of people know of these as the cameras that we use for mocap, for motion capture. So what these are, these will put a skeleton type thing on any body they sense. So they sense a physical body, it'll put a skeleton type structure. So just a stick figure, I should say, not really a skeleton, a stick figure structure over that person's body. So the really cool thing about these is if you're using a Kinect SLS camera and there's nothing there, and all of a sudden a figure walks past and it applies, or something that you can't see walks past, and then the camera applies a stick figure to it, that gets a little bit weird. Especially when that stick figure is only two legs or is only two arms and a head. They're very sensitive cameras. A bird could fly past and it'll put a dot on the bird. But if it's a full stick figure, you're going to be sitting there going, ooh, that's a bit weird. I need to look into that. Very cool device to have. A lot of people use them for a lot of different things. They are useful for more than just paranormal research. This is what they say about where you can buy them. So the camera will detect humans and animals in absolute darkness or full light. It also seems to see bodies when there is nothing there the naked eye can see, so potentially spirits. It works much like the SLS camera at a fraction of the cost. So the SLS cameras, the full price ones, are very expensive. You're looking at probably about $2,000 for a full SLS camera. But the Kinect, if you look up Kinect SLS cameras, they are a lot cheaper. You can also get attachments for these, so night vision attachments, but most of them won't need night vision because they'll pick the IR in them is dull enough that it doesn't light up the whole screen, but enough that it can pick up sensors of bodies out there walking past, or maybe there's no one there, but it'll still pick things up. Now, a lot of this equipment is really handy to be used, not just for ghost hunting. This is great equipment to use for cryptid research, UFO research, all these types of things. So just be aware of that. For all of you who might not be into the ghost stuff so much, but you might like your cryptids or your UFOs or your aliens, think about all this equipment and how you could use it in other fields as well. So that's the Kinect SLS camera, or just the SLS camera. If you've got the money for the SLS camera, yeah, go and buy an SLS. They are really cool. A few other things that you might be interested in are, so a few of the things that come out of the 3D printing community is things like the response devices. These will be like a pyramid or a cube that have been 3D printed, and there's a red and green light in the top. You turn the device on and you don't have control. No one has control over lighting up the red or the green. 90% of the time, or 99% of the time, if you leave it sitting there, the red and green light won't turn on at all. But occasionally they'll light up and no one really knows. We know that it's a electronic, it's there's a connection being made in the electronics, but there's no switch. No one's actually physically flicking a switch. Be careful when you buy these. You can pull them apart and have a look. Some people will put a relay switch on them, so they'll, when you turn them on, it'll have an automatic relay on it, and you'll be able to see this. It'll look really suspicious. You'll be able to look it up and find out whether it's legit or not. But others will have just a very thin connection that barely touches. And it's when they light up that you go, ooh, well, something must have made them connect. A lot of people will say, skeptics will say, that's moisture in the air that makes the connection work. Could be, but also it could be something very strange. Portal spirit boxes, as we said before, they're always good to have. You can get them fairly cheap now. They look like just a little handheld radio. Couple other little pieces of equipment that might be handy to you. Nothing really to do with paranormal research, but a UHF radio pack. So a pack that comes with, say, 4 to 6 radios, depending on your team. And if you need to get 2 or 3 packs of them, if you've got a huge team, just so you can stay in communication with each other. Ideally, you only want one radio. If you're having teams of two, like 2 people go one way, 2 people go another, and 2 people go upstairs, you only want 1 radio per team. Otherwise, you're going to get everyone speaking over each other. People are going to be getting feedback. It can get really annoying. Another really interesting little piece of equipment you could use is a parabolic microphone. So this is a microphone that has a headset. And it looks like something from a alien movie. It looks like a zap gun, like an alien pistol, but it's actually a microphone that you walk around, you hold, and it's got a dish, and the dish captures sound, and it blocks out the sound from behind you. Really handy to use. I've seen people take these and they will strap a thermal imaging camera onto them as well, and on one side they'll also have a thermal a red dot thermometer. You can pretty much turn that into then a all-in-one little device. There's also wrist-mounted, so they look like a smartwatch, but they're just a cheapo version of a smartwatch, but all they do is they record. Really handy. You can wear it on your wrist and record everything as you're walking around. You could have it tied to your backpack. You could loop it around, all right, there's a little bit of a delay there. That was a little bit strange. I just had a really strange moment just then as I was talking about microphones that can be wrapped around, like the wrist-mounted microphones. All of my microphone on here, it died for a second, and it's never done that before. That was a little bit freaky. It could have just been a little power surge. I don't know, but the screens didn't flicker or anything. I just, it was like... dead silence in my headset as well, and I know I've got a fan in the background that none of you can hear, and I couldn't even hear that through the headphones. So yeah, that's very, very interesting. And my dog started having a bit of a bark as well. Might be stirring something up, maybe, which freaks me out because I can't see behind me. I might need to get a mirror, but maybe I don't want a mirror because that might be even scary if I see something move in the mirror. Anyway, now I'm ranting because that was something a bit strange. But again, all weird things can be explained or potentially explained, or we can make excuses for them. It tends to be a thing that skeptics like to do, is make excuses for things. But look, I'm skeptical about a lot of things as well. In saying that, we're going to wrap this up. Not just because I got the heebie-jeebies and it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, but also because I do need to get some sleep. Finally, one of the last things that you could use as well is a new thing that was bought out a couple of years back, within the last 2 years. It looks like a crystal, but it's made out of plastic and has an LED light in it. The light has a blue, red, green, and yellow light, I believe. And they say that the light will tell you the mood of the ghost. To me, it's more if the light lights up, why is it doing that? So just like the teddy bears, just like some of the other things we were talking about, really interesting little piece of kit. You wear it around your head like a necklace. Okay, we're going to finish up. Next week, we're going to talk about, or even actually might do a second episode this week if I have time. It'll either be this week or next week. We'll do a short part three where we'll discuss the metaphysical and the non-electronic ghost hunting equipment that you can get. Some of the protection stuff. Yeah, it should be really cool. Sort of rounds everything up. We'll have the basic kit. Today's episode was the advanced kit, and then the next part three will be the metaphysical stuff, the stuff that isn't electronic. All right, so thank you for joining me. I'm still loving being back, and I hope you're enjoying these how-to episodes on how to ghost hunt and how to do research, and I hope it gives you some ideas about what you want to buy, and maybe I saved you a bit of money on not buying some dodgy equipment. But as I said, stay away from the ghost hunting stores. Use them as references. But honestly, you can buy most of this equipment from your local trade stores or from your local supermarkets as well. Stock some of this stuff. So anyway, I'm going to sign off for now. So we'll be back very soon with part three. Look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.